You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. 1 hour down, two to go for tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program, which we are barreling into once again, the top 10 most listened to shows in the country right now online, not counting our AM and FM listeners on the terrestrial affiliates. We're going to go personal now. I'm going to talk about something that I had not previously planned to discuss tonight until the last commercial break. Keith and I were talking in the studio, and we had, I think, one of the most dynamic exchanges that we've ever had, and I just wish it could have been shared on the air, and now we're going to try to replicate it. Basically, I was sharing with Keith my experience with Blue Cross Blue Shield healthcare provider. I pay for a policy for my family, for my wife and daughter and myself, an insurance policy. I don't get healthcare benefits with my work. I would be classified, I guess, as a middle-class family, maybe lower middle class. I mean, we live in the suburbs. We have a nice house, but, you know, we're not, you know, raking in close to $100,000 or anything like that a year for a family of three. And, of course, you know, we do the show as well. And that takes, you know, an investment from time to time above and beyond what's given by the audience. But anyway, so I pay $340 a month for my family's health insurance policy. $340 a month, and it has a $5,000 deductible. And then after that, it's 80-20. You know how it works. Covers prescriptions, too. We got a letter from Blue Cross Blue Shield, our provider, saying that we could go ahead and switch over to the Obamacare plan if we wanted to, but if not, we could keep our existing policy until August. So I called them up, and I said, you know, what's the difference in the plans? If I switched over now, what would I get? If I stayed, you know, give me a compare and contrast analysis. And they said, basically, for me to have the exact same plan that I have now with Obamacare, my premium per month is going to more than double to $800. $800 a month. And it won't cover prescriptions. And the deductible goes from $5,000 to $7,500. So I get an policy that's inferior to what I have now, and I pay almost three times as much. What that is, folks, is a raping of the people like me who provide for this country through my taxes. I work hard to maintain a decent living, to support my family. I was so hot last week when I got this news, I couldn't sleep that night. It's a radical socialist redistribution of wealth. It is wrong. The Bible says if a man doesn't work, he shouldn't eat. We're not talking about paraplegics here. We're talking about deadbeat scumbag people, trash, the dregs of society, mostly minorities. It's just a fact that will not work, but will have free health care at my expense and at the expense of so many others like me who I'm not getting rich. I'm just getting by. A couple of bad months and I'm a couple of months without income, and you know I lose everything I've ever worked for. I cannot afford $1,000, $800 a month in insurance. I can barely afford the $340 I pay a month. But now I'm going to have to pay almost triple to get an inferior policy, so that people who voted for Obama get theirs for free. Keith, you had a lot to say about it, and you had a lot of good things to say about it. What's going on here? You don't have insurance, Keith. You say you're going to pay the fine.
Well, you know, I think that most people will wind up paying the fine because they can't afford to pay double for less coverage. And the fine will start out low. It will gradually get higher and higher every year. It's about $500, I think, the first year. What have they accomplished? You know, if the powers that be had come to us and said, we're going to charge all of you a new tax of $500 a year to provide health insurance for non-white immigrants and non-white residents of the United States of America, there would have been an uprising. Instead, now people are choosing to do this. They've been engineered into choosing to pay this tax and consider themselves fortunate that they're only having to pay $500. And now, a lot of these people who previously had health insurance will have no health insurance. You know, this is what the powers that be, the white race traitors that are in charge of our government and the sons of Israel, who are really the ones pulling the strings, have engineered. This is what they have wrought. This is not what God hath wrought. This is what evil liberals have wrought upon America. And it's going to be the same thing throughout Europe and throughout every majority white nation in the world. What is the end game of liberalism? This is an incremental step. The end game is globalism. Back in the 50s, the John Birch Society warned us that we should beware the one-worlders who think there's no reason that Americans should live any better than Ecuadorians. We thought that was hyperbole at the time, but you know what? They were absolutely on target. The geeks that used to populate the John Birch Society had this one nailed. They knew exactly what was coming down the pike. Nobody listened to them, just like Chicken Little. But this is what has happened. Now, what can we do when we have feckless opposition like the Republican Party that caves in and counsels appeasement with every liberal enormity that comes down the pike, every liberal dispossession of the working class, of the middle class, of white people generally? Well, what we can do is try to avoid getting sick. What I'm going to do, and what I suggest, for example, I'm sitting here now in the green room eating carrots, broccoli, and fresh strawberries. This is what we need to do. We need to go to a locavore diet. We need to get organic food. We need to avoid foods that have GMOs, genetically modified organisms in them. We need to be careful what we put in our bodies. We need to get exercise, plenty of sleep. Because if you get health insurance, quite frankly, like our late friend Bill Rowland, what he wound up doing was paying for the poison that they killed him with, the chemotherapy, otherwise known to me as poison. What did they do to poor Bill Rowland? Here's what they did to Bill Rowland. They gave him a colon screening, a typical colon screening that all men over 50 are admonished, exhorted to get every year. He had no symptoms whatsoever. He had no bleeding from the rectum. He had no pain. He had no gastrointestinal distress. He had the colonoscopy, and guess what? I mean, the colon examination, they said he had a tumor, and then they told him it was a cancerous tumor. And then they put him on chemotherapy, told him they were going to take him off it and do some surgery. They never took him off it. After 2 years, he was dead. And quite frankly, 2 years of chemotherapy would kill an ox. That's what you're paying for with your health insurance, folks.
We'll be back with more, and I got a counterpoint to what Keith just said. Stay tuned.
We fought. We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Ladies and gentlemen of our Liberty Roundtable audience, we invite you to consider joining us. We use the services of George Costello and Utah Document Solutions. They are your authorized Xerox sales agent. We've been experiencing great service, pricing, and results, and we've gotten to know George and his team at Utah Document Solutions, your authorized Xerox sales agent. We were facing a huge increase from our former supplier, and we've been pleased to enjoy great service and an even lower cost of our documents. We recommend that you check with George to see if he can save you money like he has for us. Call George at 801-216-4816. He is your authorized Xerox sales agent. The number again, 801-216-4816.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. A couple of more minutes about this Obamacare fiasco as it applies to yours truly and Keith Alexander personally. Keith says he's going to opt to keep his current insurance, which is non-existent. Keith has no health coverage. And try to stay healthy, as opposed to signing on the government tit and paying an exorbitant amount for so little in return. Keith was, of course, sharing the story of Bill Rowland. That may be true, but as I shared with Keith as well, insurance certainly saved my bacon last year when I had my appendectomy. If I had not had coverage, I would be $40,000 in debt. I would have to file bankruptcy or just have that albatross around my neck forever because I couldn't pay off a $40,000 hospital bill for a surgery so simple. I mean, it was serious, obviously, when it's someone's appendix burst. It could be serious. I was in the hospital for 2 or 3 days. But they say that as far as surgeries go, an appendectomy is such a simple procedure that they let students do it in many occasions just to give them practice. But that was going to be $40,000. Now, with my insurance, I paid a fraction of that, less than 10, somewhere around 5, I believe. So insurance, you know, can serve a purpose. But here's the thing about this. As it stands now, as I understand it, I'm going to be paying much more. Now, as I was talking with Sam Bushman during the commercial break, maybe I qualify for some government subsidies that they say, and they did mention that it's a possibility, but it wasn't necessarily a certainty, at least the way it was explained to me. Well, if I do qualify for government subsidies, then I'm a recipient of socialist welfare also, and I don't want to be. I don't want the government to give me anything. I want to have as little association with the government as I possibly can. I want to work for what I have, and I want to be proud of what I earn, and I don't want anything given to me like that. It makes me just as bad as the people that I objectively criticize. But it's like you said, Keith, the Aesop's fable of the ant and the grasshopper. Well, in real life America, the ant is the sucker, and the grasshopper was a smart one. He didn't have to go out and work his fingers to the bone like we did and like our audience does. He knew that this administration would take care of him, and they are. They are pandering to their base. And what about the Republican Party doing what they have always done, and that's lose? They have lost every major confrontation with the liberals. Of course, they are liberals. The Republicans are as well, as we know. But they're supposed to be the opposition to things like socialist health care. They lost this, just like they've lost everything else. They always lose, and yet people still believe somehow by voting for them, they're putting their stock in the right people.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, Dabney, the famous Confederate theologian who was the chaplain to Thomas Stonewall Jackson and also the president of Hampton-Sidney College in Hampton, in Virginia, said after the Civil War, making comments about women's suffrage, which was a big liberal cause célèbre of the day, that definitely the forces of liberalism would win and women's suffrage would become a reality, not because of the inherent virtues of the position of the women suffragists, but because of the pathetic weakness of their opposition, which he deemed modern conservatism. He said modern conservatism, and I would put the Republican Party as the present-day version of his modern conservatives, are basically like a sparring partner to a heavyweight boxing contender. They just exist to keep the champ in shape, but they're chosen because there's no danger whatsoever of the sparring partner putting, knocking the of champion out.
They're the Washington Generals to the Globetrotters.
They're the Washington Generals to the Globetrotters, as James said, okay? Now, he said that after fulminating a little bit, the modern conservatives would lose to the women suffragists, and they would pat themselves on the back saying that were it not for their stalwart opposition, the public would be visited with the much greater evil of child suffrage. But they had conceded and compromised and won a great victory by just conceding to women's suffrage. And he said later, when children's suffrage becomes a reality, they would pat themselves on the back and say, were it not for their stalwart opposition and their wise capability of compromise, then the public would have been subjected to the even greater evil of animal suffrage. So you see how absurd it is. This is what the modern Republican Party in America is. They constantly lose, constantly counsel compromise and appeasement, and we go further and further down the road to perdition. America, the West, Sweden, England, none of these nations are what they were in 1950. Just look at this new mayor of New York that we were talking about in the last hour. How do you think New York in 1950 would have received a mayor like this? How do you think the Swedish people would have embraced a prime minister like that, or like the current prime minister of Sweden? How do you think the people in England would have embraced a prime minister like their current prime minister? They would have howled in outrage, kicked them out of office. We have no idea just how far we've fallen from what we call paleoconservatism, which is conservatism as it existed in 1950 throughout the world. People that call themselves conservative today, the Fox News type conservatives, would have been considered flaming liberals in 1950. We have basically drunk the Kool-Aid. Now, we're getting back to Obamacare and what is happening there. Sam Bushman is right. You will eventually get free insurance if they make you poor enough, and that's their intention. And when they start to give you benefits, they want you to think that the only way I can preserve myself and provide for my family is to become a good liberal and support liberalism in all of its manifestations, because they are in control. They are large and in charge. They certainly are large and in charge in our nation, because they've brainwashed our youth. We were listening to a conservative telephone caller a couple of weeks ago who said that the secret to avoiding a white racial apocalypse is to have more children. And my response as soon as he got off the phone was, what difference does it make if we all have 20 children if they all grow up to be liberals? And that's what is happening because of the control that the left has by means of the long march through the institutions of cultural Marxism in our schools, in our higher academia, in our entertainment media, in our newspapers, in our television, in our movies, in our arts. They have, that even our military is eaten up with liberalism and political correctness today. You've got to have children, and you've got to raise them very carefully, and you've got to inculcate in them an unshakable sense of racial solidarity, or else we're doomed, James. And that's the long and the short of it.
Well, when we come back, folks, we're going to shift gears from talking about how Obamacare is likely to impact us personally, and we're going to offer a scholarly assessment on pathological altruism. Keith has here in the studio with him, he brought to work tonight the latest edition of the Occidental Quarterly Magazine, the summer 2013 installment. It's got a special section on white pathology as it applies to pathological altruism, a review by Jared Taylor, and also an article by Robert Griffin, R. White's Pathological. And we're going to talk about what pathological altruism is and why we want to invest 30 minutes of the program tonight to discuss it with you. I don't think you're going to want to miss what Keith has to say. He's been preparing for this for a couple of weeks. It's going to be a barn burner. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. You're home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Oh yeah, oh, wanna be by my side. Oh yeah, oh, now it's finally time.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm waiting for Keith to return to the studio. I'm guessing he went to the green room to get some more broccoli or something. Yeah, that's his insurance plan. He's taking his medicine tonight on the show, and he's got a lot of stuff in here that's really scaring me. I see an apple. I see carrots. It's frightening to me. But, okay, here he is. He's back. He's back from the green room. He's back and ready to clock in. Okay, Keith, you got to live up to the billing now I gave you in the last run-up to the commercial break. What do you got? What are you talking about and why?
Look, it's hard to live up to the billing that James gives you because it doesn't matter how prepared you come into the studio. He will throw you some curveball out of the news that just totally discombobulates you and puts you in, a frenzy. You look like you've stuck your finger into an electrical socket. You know, your hair's standing on end and whatnot. And James has done that again tonight. But in spite of that, I'm going to try to carry on and do the best I can with what I've got. And this is this article, this edition of the Occidental Quarterly for the summer of 2013 on white pathology. And let me read from a couple of articles just to give you a flavor about what we're talking about. Kevin McDonald, the inimitable Kevin McDonald of the Occidental Quarterly, and who has written books on Jewish power and influence that are extremely scholarly, heavily footnoted, and absolutely academically impeccable, wrote an article called Empathy and Moral Universalism as Components of White Pathology. And he writes an article about the movement to abolish slavery in England. And he says, only whites have been made to feel moral disgust at their own past of conquest and expansion. And as elaborated below, only whites, not all to be sure, but a significant and important proportion, have felt moral outrage about slavery to the point of banning it despite the material benefit to the society as a whole and a great many individuals quite a bit like themselves. The topic of white pathology is certainly multifaceted, as seen in this special issue. One major reason for whites actively opposing the interests of their own people is that the rewards and punishments of contemporary Western cultures favor whites willing to actively oppose the interests of people like themselves. Behavior that is individually adaptive in terms of advancing one's own career is often disastrous in the long run for whites as a group. Take, for example, the white politician who eagerly courts Latino voters by advocating open borders. He may be successful, but with results that are disastrous for whites in the next generation and beyond. Consider also the white college president who reaps a high six-figure salary by promoting diversity initiatives that will eventually disempower and dispossess whites and even result in discrimination against whites in university admissions, but he is certainly pursuing an individually adaptive strategy. But the results are tragic for whites as a whole. This is the key. This is the message in the bottle that people need to understand. The left, as Pat Buchanan said in Death of the West, is the new establishment. The counterculture of the 50s and 60s is the dominant culture of today, and the dominant culture of the 50s and the 60s in America, at least, is now the dissident culture of today. If you're a conservative, you are not with it. You're not positioned to be promoted, to get a place in the sun, or to have a lucrative career. Being conservative is a real buzz killer, to use a modern phrase. On the other hand, being politically correct on racial issues and on issues such as Jewish power and influence is the ticket to success and prosperity. If you're a college president and you try to end affirmative action at your college, you would undoubtedly be voted out. You would be roundly criticized in the local newspaper and on the local television stations. You would be marginalized and cast into the outer darkness. This is what we need to understand. We have to deal with the fact that young people, in particular, have been subjected to ceaseless brainwashing and psychological conditioning since the moment that they turned on a television set or walked into a school. It doesn't matter, really, whether it's a public school or a private school. The people that teach in private schools, the people that run the administration of private schools, have attended the same colleges and universities of education that their counterparts in the public school system have attended. They have been subjected to the same brainwashing. They have the same values. They're members of the same professional organizations. And they want recognition within their profession just like other people do, because recognition translates into promotions and more money. And they're drinking from the same spring as the leftists in the public schools, and you won't find a whole lot of difference in their outlook. These are the people that you're paying good money to send your children to school to learn under. This is why homeschooling is more and more becoming the only viable option. And even if you don't homeschool your children, you're going to have to spend a considerable amount of time each and every school evening deprogramming them from what they've learned that day in school. And you're also going to have to discipline them to hide their light under a bushel if you want them to succeed. If they don't regurgitate the same leftist tripe that they're being taught, they will be graded down for it, which is exactly what liberals want. They want people to identify being a leftist with being smart and being conservative with being dumb. And if you're going to be graded down for being conservative, you get the C, the liberal gets the A. That's just reinforcing that standard of behavior. And, you know, that they're making the failure of conservatives a self-fulfilling prophecy. I saw James reaching out for the microphone here. I'm going to hand it to him and let him run with it for a minute.
Folks, we're going to get back to Keith's assessment and analysis of pathological altruism in the next segment after the commercial break. But before we go to that break, I want to take a caller. We have Chris from Canada on the line with us now. Chris, take it away.
Hey, guys. Just on the lighter side, you were talking about basketball earlier. This is a segue. Not a segue, but it's just something I had to mention. You guys are talking about a basketball. And I'm Canadian. I don't know if you've noticed or not.
Don't seem to have a southern drawl, I can say that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you guys have forgotten that there's a Canadian basketball player out there who happens to be white and short, who pretty much dominates the court, and nobody seems to talk about him.
You talking about Steve Nash?
Steve Nash.
Let me tell you about Steve Nash, okay?
Yeah.
Steve Nash is actually a South African. His family emigrated to Canada from South Africa when South Africa became an intolerable place for white people to live in. But his family, like Alana Mercer's family, like the families of a lot of other leftists who've come from South Africa, were big supporters of the anti-apartheid movement. But they don't see any connection between the success of the anti-apartheid movement, the empowerment of blacks, and the fact that South Africa became an intolerable place for them to live in. So Steve Nash moved to Canada, got into the NBA, was a good basketball player. He was a good soccer player, too, I understand, in his youth. But he still hasn't learned anything from experience. And he's tolerated in the NBA specifically because he's a poster boy for every liberal program that comes down the pike. If he were really a conservative, he would have suffered the same fate as John Rocker, who went from being one of the top relief pitchers in Major League Baseball into being an outcast who was, suffered in the minor leagues for a few years and basically had to get out of baseball because he dared to challenge politically correct orthodoxy with his famous comments about Times Square and about how he hated New York.
Well, I will say this to you, Chris, before we go to the break. There is no doubt, though, that Steve Nash, in his prime, was the greatest player in the NBA for a couple of years. Not only did he win the MVP awards, and he did win those, it was just dazzling to watch him play. And it just goes to show that white players can play basketball, too, from time to time. We're going to take a break, folks.
Right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1,200-millimeter coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Let's take care of your family and get it prepared, and help us take care of our brothers and sisters in arms. From now through Veterans Day on November 11th, FreezeDryGuy.com is offering 10% off everything for active duty, reserve, and retired U.S. military members and their families. No proof necessary. It's on the honor system. In addition, for every purchase you make during this period, we'll make a donation to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. Since retiring from the Army, the Freeze Dry Guy has been your trusted source for freeze-dried food and dehydrated food, perfect for emergency preparedness and outdoor activities like camping. He's offering 10% off for active, reserve, and retired U.S. military and their families now through Veterans Day, plus donating to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation from every purchase. Call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, or go to freezedryguy.com, freezedryguy.com.
Back to get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. You are listening to the Political Cesspool, and at this moment, we are ranked number 10 in the country. Most listened to talk show on the internet, not counting our AMFM affiliates, and we consistently have been breaking into the top 10 for about 2 or 3 months now, each and every week. We peaked at number 4 a couple of weeks ago, and the reason for it is clear. There is only one radio show and only one radio network in the country that is going to offer you a very well-reasoned dissent from a pro-white perspective on the issues that matter most to the European-American community. If you are a white, conservative Christian, this is the show for you. We love all of humanity. We respect cultural diversity. Some cultural diversity we like to appreciate from afar, but we don't mince words when it comes to the fact that our primary focus and the beneficiaries of our efforts in talk radio are our kinsmen. And again, that's nothing but natural and healthy way to go about one's work. And that's why we continue to sustain so much success in the ratings. Of course, fundraising is always a bear. And we will be kicking off our fourth quarter fundraising drive here at the end of November, 1st of December. And we hope that everybody will be preparing to chip in again. I know we have a lot of people that answer the call every quarter. And we need you every quarter, folks. Without it, we're done. All right, Keith, you getting back to what we were talking about before, you are reviewing the latest edition of the Occidental Quarterly as it pertains to pathological altruism. What other observations have you drawn and would like to share with the audience?
Well, let me get back into this edition of the Occidental Quarterly for summer 2013 and an article written by a gentleman named Robert S. Griffin entitled, "Are Whites Pathological? Yes and No." Let's start it off. He says, in October of 2012, the editor of this journal, Kevin McDonald, he's a person we read from in the last segment, issued a call for papers for inclusion in an upcoming theme issue on white pathology. Whatever blame for our situation that we place on others, Professor McDonald wrote, the bottom line is that we are allowing the unfolding disaster to happen. It is unprecedented for a civilization to voluntarily cede political and cultural hegemony to others, particularly when so many of these people harbor hatreds and resentments towards our people and our culture. This writing is my response to that call. He said, Professor McDonald has himself made significant contributions to this investigation. He has pointed out two contributing factors to white pathology: individualism and the negative impact of Jewish elites. He said, there are doubtless a great many factors accounting for the general willingness of whites to allow themselves to be pushed aside and to voluntarily become a minority amid a sea of non-whites, most of whom hold historical grudges against them, in other words, white people. My general view is that these cultural transformations are the result of a complex interaction between pre-existing tendencies of Europeans towards individualism interacting with the rise of a Jewish elite hostile to the traditional peoples and cultures of Europe and their descendants in the New World. He says, I'm not so presumptuous as to believe I'm establishing a great truth in this paper, but I am offering, I believe, a significant and important truth, that white behavior is at the same time both pathological and foolish, and at the same time highly rational and sensible. That is to say, it is not one or the other, craziness or sanity, but both. And I am saying that if we are to do something about improving white state of being now and in the future, we would do well to take this truth into account. To get a handle on this truth, this reality, it helps to bring an individualistic, in contrast to an aggregate, perspective to bear on the examination of white thought and deed and their consequences. So instead of looking at the white race as a whole and what it's doing, how it's doing, let's take a look at an individual white person and see where that takes us. The individual I have in mind is not a specific person. He is an abstraction drawn from young people I have encountered. I teach at a university, he says in parenthetically, and from what I've read. Let's call him John Jones. John is characteristic, typical, representative. So even though the focus here is on an individual, there are sociological and psychological generalizations involved in drawing him up. It is just that the object of study in this instance is the individual rather than the aggregate. John Jones is a 21-year-old white Gentile and senior at a university in America. Even though I'm making him up, let's give him reality. Imagine this young white man in our mind's eye. What can we say about our Mr. Jones? What's on his mind? What is he trying to get done in his life? Important in this context is what John Jones isn't thinking about, and that's the status and destiny of the white race. Whites may be marching into the sea, but that is not what is occupying John's mind this afternoon between video games and slices of pizza. John couldn't tell you what the word hegemony means, and he has more pressing things on his mind than looking up its meaning in a dictionary. Parenthetically, I'm worried I'm coming off flip and condescending here, but I don't mean to be, and I shouldn't be. I spend more than a little of my time on a food-stained leather couch munching on takeout Mugu Gaipan in a cardboard box and drinking caffeine-free Diet Cola and perusing ESPN.com. The truth be told, I was very late in life before I bothered to find out what hegemony means. Who am I to look down my nose at what anybody does with his or her life? If I'm doing that to any extent, please don't let my personal limitations get in the way of your consideration of the basic argument I'm making here. Then he says, if John Jones doesn't care about race, what does he care about? John cares about his social life. He is exhibiting himself on his Facebook page and trying to look attractive and cool and collect friends. He's tweeting about what brand of skis he likes and what he's doing for the weekend in 140 characters per tweet. And he's checking his mobile phone every 10 minutes. He is working on his abs and his haircut to be attractive to women and doing all he can to ensure himself a reasonable number of romantic interludes. He's trying to feel good about himself, to get his self-esteem in good order, see himself as an admirable person, a good guy and not a bad guy. John's not read a book this year that hasn't been assigned reading in one of his courses at the university, and he doesn't read a daily newspaper or sites like CNN. Occasionally, he catches Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert on television and finds them funny, especially Stewart. He's graduating in June and hopes to get a good job. Depending on how the job interviews go, he might wait tables this summer in Colorado. Up the line, he'd like to have a family and live in a respectable and happy and peaceful life. Jon has been in the hands of the enemies of white people all his life, many of which, interestingly enough, have been white Gentiles like John. If there have ever been anything or anybody bad in the history of life on planet Earth, according to the people who have had his ear and have graded his papers, the mass media, politicians, textbooks, and teachers, a white like him was likely involved. Slave owners, Nazis, rural hicks, and rednecks. His people. Who slaughtered the Indians? There you go. The exploiters of colonial peoples? That's right. Thomas Jefferson? He had this thing going on with a slave. Who kept Jackie Robinson out of baseball? Three guesses. The dreaded sexist, autocratic, villainous white male. All he has to do is look in a mirror. Racists and haters. The referent isn't Jewish or black racism and hate. Homophobes? Who killed Matthew Shepard? That's the homosexual guy that led to the homosexual movement in large part in the 90s. John's kind did. That's who. The religious right, scary wackos, John's a Catholic, pedophile priest, come on. Diversity for sure, but that's not about celebrating or looking out for John or people like him. Basically, John Jones has succumbed to the conditioning he has undergone. He's bought it. Although, I say, basically, within our man John Jones, a residue of his training is a F me, F you. Resentment, anger, and self and racial/cultural self-affirmation. This byproduct of John's racial and cultural diminution is a source of hope to white advocates and activists. If they can tap into this felt, even if inarticulate, preconscious inner reality within John Jones and bring it to the surface and help him put words to it and give it meaning, It has a potential for transforming a domesticated, face-licking lapdog into an unchained and raging Fenris wolf from Norse mythology. But back to the main point. For all the practical purposes John's heart and mind have been had when it comes to race, the mind shaping has worked. John's associates his whiteness with guilt and shame. His racial identity is nothing to bring front and center and be proud of. Rather, it is something to atone for. And why should John see things any other way? He couldn't name a white advocate or a white organization if his life depended on it. John Jones knows infinitely more about LeBron James and the Miami Heat than he does about white race realism. Whites have no interest, no need for solidarity, no need for leadership or organization or collective action, no need for self-determination. Every other group on the face of the earth, yes, whites, no. Okay, folks, that's the way this article goes. I think we're about to break. I'm going to have to pick up with this next week. But I want everybody to go out and check this on the internet, or better yet, join